Today, as air pollution in Delhi hits a record high this month, we look at the very different impact it has on the rich and the poor in the city. And what's life really like in border country, where Donald Trump wants to build his wall, and where four aid workers were convicted after leaving out food and water for desperate migrants crossing the desert. Welcome to Delhi, capital of India. It's home to 29 million people and thousands of rickshaws.
You book again from Qutub Minar to Nizamuddin. It's very cheaper price.
For the past few years, The Guardian South Asia correspondent Michael Safi has struck up a friendship with one rickshaw driver in particular, a man called Pandit.
At one point he was trying to set me up with another one of his customers.
What, on a date?
Yeah, whenever this poor woman got into his rickshaw, I would get a phone call from him and he would hand the phone over to her. And we'd have to have this, you know, incredibly awkward conversation. We were like, oh, so I guess we have the same rickshaw driver. Oh, yeah, I guess we do. Okay, well, see you later. You know, this went on for weeks and weeks until we both had to tell him, Pandit, please, you need to stop doing this.
But Pandit hasn't just been helping Michael to find love. The two of them are working together to find out what impact living and working in Delhi is having on his health. Because Delhi is one of the most polluted cities in the world, and it's getting worse. This January has already seen the highest levels of air pollution since they were first recorded in 2015. Despite this, the population of the world's second biggest city grows every year. From The Guardian, I'm Anushka Astana. Today in Focus, why people are dying to live in Delhi. Can you give us a sense of how bad pollution is in Delhi? Can you see it? Can you feel it?
Well, you can see it and you can feel it. It's just this thick white mist that seems to hang over everything.
Michael Safi is The Guardian's South Asia correspondent and has lived in the city for nearly 3 years.
You can't really see on a bad day beyond about 30 or 40 metres in front of you. On better days, visibility might extend to like 100 metres. And on those bad days, if you spend any time outside, your throat begins to ache, your eyes become really sore, you can feel a shortness of breath, and if you hang around long enough, eventually you'll get a headache. It's really a very obvious effect on the body.
I've just checked the air quality index for Delhi today, and it's around about 400, which is about 8 times what the World Health Organization says is safe air to breathe. When you close your mouth, you can hear it crunching between your teeth.
Do people in Delhi worry about it?
It really depends on who you're talking about. So among the upper middle classes and the upper classes, there is some concern beginning to develop because they're reading about it, they're understanding the really atrocious health impacts that it has. But among lower middle class or poorer Indians, who make up the vast majority of the country, well over 90%, it isn't really something that they're aware of, that is a problem. They might know, they might have seen in newspapers that there's something wrong with the air, but this idea that the atmosphere they're breathing is actually toxic is not something I imagine that would be ranked among their top concerns.
And what about you? I mean, you're reporting there, you're living there. Do you worry?
I do worry, yeah. Yeah. I mean, India is a magnificent country. It's a brilliant story to be covering, particularly at this point in history. But, I mean, Delhi is an unpleasant city to live in at times because of this pollution. It means that some weekends you spend it indoors with the air purifiers on. You're constantly checking the air quality index number for that day. It really has an impact on the way you work, on the way you live your life.
And does it mean that you won't stay there for as long as you might have done?
Yeah, at some point I'll have to prioritise my health over the work here and call time on my stint in India.
So these days, when I think of India, I think of unbelievably busy traffic, of kind of clogged up roads, of beeping horns, of exhaust pipes, and in the middle of it all, just hundreds of the iconic Delhi rickshaws, you know, with their green bottoms and yellow tops and their drivers sort of hanging out of the door half the time. Tell me who they are and what a typical day is for a rickshaw driver.
Well, it involves a lot of time outside, for one thing, and a lot of talking, a lot of haggling with customers, sweet-talking tourists, trying to get them to jump in your rickshaw.
Customer.
No, I'm not looking for a trip.
Yeah, it's a pretty busy job. A lot of noise, a lot of chaos, and tough, tough work.
So, 2 years ago, you decided to attach an air monitor to one of those rickshaw drivers. Why did you do that?
Well, I wanted to find a way to communicate to people just how dire this problem was, without necessarily focusing on the upper middle class, the people in India who are already concerned about this. You know, most rickshaw drivers in Delhi are pretty quiet people, at least with me. You know, their English often isn't great. And they get around in these grey safari suits, except for this one driver who I kept meeting outside one of the markets in Delhi.
You know this whole city, huh?
All Delhi map here in my mind. Yeah.
And tell me about him. What's his name? What's he like?
His name is Suresh, but he goes by the nickname Pandit. He is a bit of a bragger.
But I say, sir, we have Imperial tuk-tuk. My service is much better. To other tuk-tuk driver or Ula Uber cab, yeah.
Did you say you have an Imperial tuk-tuk?
Yeah, Imperial, it's truth.
He's a very charming guy, and he begins to tell you about his other foreign customers.
She's from Netherlands.
You know, mayors and presidents.
She's mayor of Netherlands.
She's the mayor?
Yeah.
All these famous people who have sat in the back of his rickshaw.
Do you think he's taken a president?
I think that's extremely unlikely. I think it's very unlikely that he's taken any presidents. And I just got to thinking, a guy like this, how much poor air is he breathing every day? And what impact is it having on his health? And so we asked him, can we put an air quality monitor in the back of your rickshaw and follow you around for a day? And he didn't even hesitate. He jumped at the idea. And so we made the video.
Lekin mere customer ye kehte hain ki Pandit, not a daily. You are world famous. You are world famous auto driver.
And how do you measure air quality?
Well, we had, it's a pretty inexact method. We had a small monitor that's just commercially available. It's pretty good, not perfect. And we drove around for 5 or 6 hours with him, checking the rate every half an hour or so. And then at the end of it, we took him to a lung specialist in Delhi who agreed to see him. And we ran him through the whole battery of lung capacity tests to see what impact the air had had on him. As we drove around with him, we found that the levels of air he was exposed to, indeed that we were all exposed to, were many, many times above what the World Health Organization considers to be safe limits. And then when we took him to the doctor, it was discovered to Pandit, as well as to the rest of us, that in fact he had developed asthma.
He's an asthmatic, and he does not know he's an asthmatic. His lung capacity is 50% at this point of time. If he doesn't take treatment right now, 5 years' time, he's definitely going to have a lot of problems.
And the doctor said that if he spent, you know, any more time in the city, it would only get worse, and eventually he would have to quit his job or stop working for health reasons, because his lungs simply wouldn't be able to take it anymore.
And did they think that the asthma had developed as a result of the air pollution?
Well, that's hard to say, but certainly it had been exacerbated by the fact that he was A, untreated, and B, breathing this atrocious quality air day in, day out. I mean, he works 7 days for most of the year. He's basically exposed all the time.
How did he feel about the diagnosis?
I think he found it to be pretty bracing news. I mean, he wasn't aware that he had asthma. And I think it was made worse by the fact that he knew, he acknowledged that he wouldn't really be able to do much to treat himself because he couldn't afford the regular treatment that was required. He couldn't buy the medicine. He couldn't take the time off work to get nebulizers. And a couple of people who watched the video offered to buy him masks. So we bought him some masks. And I've never seen him wear them. He tells me he does. But I think most of the time they just sit in his rickshaw.
2 years after Pandit was first examined, he and Michael decided to run the tests again this month, the most polluted on record in Delhi.
I've come to the market here in Delhi, where I was supposed to meet Pandit. Here he is. How are you, Pandit?
I'm good, fine.
Very good to see you.
What is this?
This is a radio recorder.
A radio recorder?
Yeah.
The last 2 years in Delhi have been the most polluted on record. And so I thought it would be interesting to go back to him now and take him back to the same doctor and run the same tests to see what impact that pollution has had on someone who spends most of their time outside.
Was he pleased to see you?
Oh, he was delighted to know that I wanted to make another story about him. I mean, he's been asking me for the last 2 years when the next interview is going to be. Do I know anyone at the New York Times he can speak to? And so, yes, he jumped at the opportunity and I met him one morning and we took him along to the doctor's office. And again, he was hooked up to these different machines. He was nebulized and we saw the results of the test.
What had happened?
According to the doctor, his lung capacity has deteriorated over the past couple of years. It's gotten worse. But he said it wasn't as bad as it could have been because he's managed to seek some treatment. He's since abandoned it. And so there weren't vast improvements, but nor had his health fallen off a cliff, which may have been the case if he had never sought any treatment, never known that he had this condition.
The reason Pandit abandoned his treatment was because he simply couldn't afford it.
The doctors said that if he were to seek regular treatment, then he has a huge potential to improve. But they acknowledged that it's not really possible for someone in his position to get the treatment he needs because, as the doctor said, it would require him taking at least 1 day a month off work. And 1 day's earnings multiplied by 12 begins to really hit his yearly income. And he probably doesn't have a huge amount of income that he can stand to lose. It was kind of sad. It was an acknowledgement that here's a person who with treatment could improve, but we all knew that getting that treatment is probably going to be out of his reach in the long term.
And how serious is a condition like this?
Well, when he was diagnosed with asthma, when we spoke to the doctor the first time, The doctor said that there were limits on how long he could stay in Delhi, how long he could keep doing this job, because particularly as he ages, the deterioration in his health is going to become more acute. And at some point, he'll have to leave the city. He'll have to stop doing this work.
Option is probably if he can do the same business, if he goes to a better place, a less polluted city. But then the amount of money he will be earning there would be quite less.
Do you think he would leave Delhi if he could?
As we were driving to the doctor that morning, he talked to me a bit about that. And he said that he would love to. I mean, he knows how bad this is for him now.
We don't have so much money. But if God give me so much rupees, I live other side. I don't live in Delhi. Never.
But he doesn't have a choice. His family live in a regional area in the next state over. I mean, they're all reliant on the income he makes from Delhi. To leave it now or to leave Delhi isn't really an option, particularly because the air pollution problem isn't just in Delhi. It's across all of North India. So if he were to go back to his hometown of Meerut, which is in Uttar Pradesh, the air pollution might be better, but it would still be many times worse than the World Health Organization limits.
And obviously, this is the story of Pandit, but it's a story that's much bigger than one person. I mean, there are 1.5 million three-wheeled rickshaws on India's roads. I mean, how concerned are you, were the doctors that you spoke to, about the kind of wider problem?
Hugely concerned. Lung specialists I've spoken to in Delhi say that the cancer profile of the patients they see has completely changed in the last 20 years. Their lung cancer patients have gone from being predominantly older male smokers to younger female non-smokers. India is a young country, and it's a country where many people, particularly those in the very polluted cities, are growing up with a compromised lung capacity. it's having a very real and tangible health impact. I mean, according to The Lancet, toxic air killed 1.24 million people in 2017. That's 12% of all deaths across India that was attributed to air pollution.
So what is the advice that doctors would give to people?
Well, they say get out of Delhi. At the height of the air pollution crisis a couple of years ago, that they came out and said in a statement that this city is not fit for anyone anymore. No one can live here in a healthy way anymore. In the absence of being able to leave, the advice they give is stay indoors, is wear a mask, which very few people do. It's as much as possible try to insulate yourself from the outside world, but without an air purifier, it's virtually impossible. There's really nothing substantive that people can do to dramatically improve the air they breathe.
And why don't people wear masks? I know that they do in certain Chinese cities, for example.
Look, Delhi is a pretty macho city. Its culture is a pretty tough one. It's full of tough people. And the times that I've worn a mask in Delhi, which is, as often as I can, you get stared at. People look at you like you're doing something really strange.
Do you wear a mask day to day?
I try to, but it kind of serves as this reminder that the place you're living in is not normal and the life you're living is not normal. Today, the air monitors in Delhi were showing an air quality index of 644. According to the World Health Organization, 50 is the upper limit of good. 100 is satisfactory. So 644 is beyond severe. I mean, it's a rate that anywhere else in the world would be an unprecedented crisis. Recently, Thailand had a rate of 185, and they were closing schools, they were putting out warnings. The same day, Delhi's rate was higher and nobody cared. Life went on.
Does the Indian Prime Minister, Narendra Modi, ever talk about air pollution?
Very rarely, and he's mentioned it indirectly a couple of times, but it's absolutely not an issue that he's taken on. I think that's actually pretty good strategy on his part because, why would you want to associate yourself with a problem that isn't going to get better in the short term, one that is probably going to worsen or stay just as bad for the near future? It doesn't make any sense for him politically. So he has largely avoided it, even as the Indian government has come around to the problem and began to address it.
What action is the government taking about this? I mean, around the world, people are increasingly associating Delhi with poor air pollution.
Well, the government only recently has announced a 5-year plan that they hope will reduce air pollution in 102 cities by up to 30%. And that's mainly focused on reducing the pollution from cars and from industry. However, environmentalists are pretty critical of the plan. They say that it doesn't have well thought out mechanisms for enforcement. And the amount of funding that's been put up for the plan is quite low. It's far lower than, for example, the amount of money they paid recently to build the world's largest statue in Gujarat.
Well, we are here right at the base of the Statue of Unity. There was a flypast by Surya Kiran and helicopters showering petals and colour.
And so people are wondering how much of a priority is this air pollution versus other things?
Why? What is it? Why is it that people don't care? Why isn't Modi talking about this? Why isn't the government taking more action?
It's a good question. I think for the majority of Indians, life is pretty tough. It's still overwhelmingly a poor country. And there's enough tangible things to worry about that this kind of invisible problem, something that is in the air that you're not going to necessarily kill you tomorrow or next week, but will shorten your life over the long term, ends up falling lower in the rank of priorities than those more immediate problems of how do I feed my family? How do I get a job? How do I protect my community? I mean, these are things that are far more obvious challenges that I think end up consuming people's lives. It's something where if you're rich enough, you can, to some extent, make your own atmosphere. And those who can't afford to do that, they just suffer.
Michael, as for you, are you still getting rides in Pandit's rickshaw?
Yeah, a couple of times a week. I take a ride with Pandit and get to see all the newest selfies, all the newest customers he's taken around. Yeah, he's very much a part of my life here.
Sir, are you ready to proceed?
Yes, please.
Okay.
Michael, please give our love to Pandit and thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Anushka.
You can read all of Michael's reporting at theguardian.com. Coming up, in opinion, writer Anna Adlerstein on Donald Trump's rhetoric versus reality in border country, where she says a huge stretch of wilderness is far more harrowing than any wall.
In today's non-stop world, making quality time for yourself is more important than ever. When you buy a subscription to The Guardian and The Observer, you can look forward to sitting back and leafing through every page at your own pace. From the latest groundbreaking investigations to recipes, reviews, award-winning sports coverage, and more. Subscribe before the 3rd of February and you'll save up to 52% on newspaper subscriptions for a year. Just search Guardian subscriptions.
Welcome back. The row over Donald Trump's wall has now shut down the US government for the longest stretch in the country's history. This week, a federal judge found four women guilty of entering a national wildlife refuge without a permit as they tried to place food and water in the Arizona desert for migrants. Anna Adlerstein is living in the area in Ajo, Arizona.
People think about the border as this line, right? But in fact, the border where I stand is actually an 80-mile swath of land. That line is much less significant than the corridor that extends from that line beyond the final checkpoint. It's essentially using the desert as the border, the desert as the prevention. So the wall itself has much less impact than this 80 miles of harsh wilderness that a migrant needs to cross through in order to get to America safely. People need to understand that the desert is being used as a weapon and that militarization already exists. It's a low-intensity war zone, and especially this region where I'm living, where there's actually active bombing going on. A migrant can wander into the bombing range. I actually see planes and I hear sonic booms and I see flares coming down for military practice at the Barry M. Goldwater Air Force Base. I think it would be shocking for a lot of people, even within America, even within Arizona, to come and spend time on the border region. It's something that I was really surprised by when I came here. In Ajo, the Border Patrol in this area has ballooned to more than 20,000 agents on the reservation. So for communities that already live through so much trauma, the increased militarization is really terrifying. They really see this wall as a political ploy. It's not actually reflective of the reality that folks face here. I mean, the asylum seekers coming across the border are not an invasion. They are people looking for fundamental human rights. No matter which side of the political spectrum you fall on, you don't want people dying in your backyard. This intense militarization is a really hard environment to work under, especially for groups who are trying to support migrants and keep them from dying in the desert. One group in particular is under really intense fire from the federal government. They're a group called No More Deaths. So the government is charging them with federal misdemeanors for littering, for leaving water bottles, and for driving on restricted wilderness access roads when they were trying to look for people who had called out in distress and respond to those calls. Their efforts are vital. I mean, leaving water in the desert and responding to search and rescue calls when people are missing is really, truly the difference between life or death. So the government crackdown and the repression is really extreme in this area, and it's just really clear that the lives of people crossing this desert are the least of what anyone cares about.
That's it for today. My thanks to Michael Safi, the wonderful Pandit, and Anna Adlerstein. Today's producers were Rachel Humphreys and Amar Kalia. Sound design was by Axel Cucoutier. The executives are Phil Maynard and Nicole Jackson. See you tomorrow.